Just a couple of minutes after 8 o'clock on a Wednesday. Welcome to the Mornings with Ed show. Delighted to have you with us today. Wednesday here means Laureen Gilbert. She's the award-winning president and CEO of Wealthwise Financial Services. And man, do we need her this week for the Wealthwise moment. Welcome, Laureen. How are you today?
Wonderful. Good to be here, Ed. Good morning.
Glad to have you as well. What does your day look like? I know we always talk about it specifically what's happening here. What does your day look like?
Well, thanks for asking. My day involves meeting with people all day long and talking about their finances, talking about their specific situations, questions like, when can I retire? What is my probability of success if I retire now or in 3 years or in 5 years? And we do various scenarios for people, like what if I move to a different state, or what if I sell my home that's gone up in value so much and I buy a different home that's not as expensive? Of course, you got to find that other home too, right, in this crazy market. But those are the kinds of questions that we answer for people, and we go over their portfolios and how we are matching their risk tolerance of how they feel about volatility in the markets with the portfolios that we put together for them. And we measure and track that progress so they can see year by year how they're getting closer to their end goals.
Right. And I imagine it's something you love doing.
I absolutely love it. I absolutely love it. And nothing makes me happier than to see a client accomplishing their goals and being able to retire and do, kind of the next phase of life. And, of course, then we help people think about what their legacy is at that point, too. We talk about that we do three things with clients: help them articulate their vision, navigate the risks of the market, and help them create a legacy. So that's another important aspect of the conversation.
Excellent. And you'll be helping potential home shoppers here in just a couple of minutes. I know you will with some of the questions I'll be asking you, the answers I'm hoping
okay.
to hear. First, I want to get to Wall Street. They seem to be wasting no time getting their employees back into the office after the pandemic, or here as we're clearing from the pandemic. Morgan Stanley, CEO James Gorman, warned this week that he'd be very disappointed if his workers aren't back by Labor Day, and he'd said that he would have a very different conversation with them if they weren't. Goldman Sachs has asked their employees to be at the office this week, and they've even ordered staffers to divulge whether they've been vaccinated. Now, we know that Zoom calls and Slack messages are no substitute for in-person bonding and training, but I think my question is the risk that banks and Wall Street are taking, if they move too aggressively, could they lose talent to more nimble yet equally lucrative industries like the Silicon Valley?
Most definitely, Ed. So we've had a shift on employee mentality, and we've had a shift with workers in general. So we heard last week that more Americans have left their jobs, just quit their jobs, than ever before in the history of the United States of America. So there's definitely a shift in mentality. And I think what's happened with the pandemic is people got accustomed to being at home. People got accustomed to having more flexibility. And the workplace was moving towards more flexibility. But now there's this tension between employees and employers. And really what you said about Wall Street is true. What's going on is they're basically saying, get in your seat at work or else.
Right.
And, you know, the or else is putting an ultimatum on employees, and some of them are not going to return. Now, I'm not advocating that. I'm just telling you what's happening.
Right.
And the other thing I will tell you, I mean, I was just having a conversation yesterday with a business owner, local Laguna business owner, who was having a hard time hiring people. She is trying to hire somebody because everybody wants to work from home. And she's like, made it clear in the job description, this job requires you to be in the office. But there's definitely a big pushback going on. And the other thing you mentioned is are these companies that are requiring employees to be vaccinated. And I think that's going to ultimately be put to a test. Somebody's going to sue a company and somebody's going to take it up the chain of the court system. And we'll see where that lands as far as mandating vaccines. I don't think I don't think that that's going to be able to stand. But you know, I think it's definitely going to be challenged.
Well, there's already been a court case with a Houston Methodist Hospital. They won yesterday, being able to fire 153 of their employees who refused vaccination. So that's that was, I think, the test case for that industry. And I'm wondering.
Well, I think it's going to continue to be appealed, though. I think that's going to go up the court system for sure.
Right. That'll be our test case right there, I think. Mm-hmm. So that'll be the canary in the coal mine. But with Wall Street in particular, at its core, banking is a face-to-face business. So is it, and you know it better than I do, is it that Wall Street wants, they don't want to lose a deal because of slow Wi-Fi, for instance? Can you lose a deal because of slow Wi-Fi?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with needing that employee interaction and also supervision. I mean, you know, when you're dealing with private data, the best way to protect all of that is to centralize your operations and not have people being able to work, you know, over, let's say, a Wi-Fi that's not secured.
Right.
So I think part of it is around security measures, needing to be concerned about cybersecurity that we hear so much about, and supervision of what's going on with employees, as well as being able to have that interaction with clients and with employees and with employee peers amongst themselves and amongst their supervisors. So, I think that Wall Street is trying to get back to some sense of normalcy, and we'll see how Main Street reacts to that as well, how things kind of filter down into other industries.
I want to take you across the ocean before I jump back here to the United States and go to China. China's been putting pressure on cryptocurrency companies, and it's been affecting the value of these companies. What specifically is China doing?
So, you know, when it comes to any of these blockchain technologies, it uses a lot of energy. It uses a lot of electricity. And so they're citing concerns about their climate goals as being one of the reasons. But we all know that what China is interested in is having control over their own currency. And that's why we've heard that China is developing their own digital currency, and they expect that they don't want competition with their own digital currency. So ultimately, this is an area that will be regulated. China is the first to really at the forefront of both creating their digital currency as well as regulations to clamp down on others. I think that's going to be a trend that we see across the oceans, and that will take place around the world. And that's why people need to be cautious and be careful and make sure. You know, I think that, you know, the United States as well, we've heard the Fed talk about and Treasury and Fed both talk about that there will probably be a U.S. digital currency as well that can be regulated and avoid any kind of black market.
Okay. Thank you for that. Before I get into the U.S. stock futures and where that ride is taking us, I do want to talk about existing home prices. The existing home price in May was about $350,000, according to a report from the National Association of Realtors. That's up almost 25% from last May. Are we seeing, and we've been talking about it for weeks, we've been talking about the skyrocketing home values for weeks, are we seeing the same kind of bubble that we saw burst in 2007?
So I don't think we can make that correlation yet, and here's why. So first of all, housing is still affordable. And I know, even, you know, with a 25% increase, that certainly has taken some buyers out of the market, especially, you know, it's really hard for a first-time home buyer to buy a house when they're trying to save money and then prices go up that much, then the amount of their down payment has just gone up 25% as well. So very hard on the lower end for people to get in. But it's all a supply and demand game, and it's also an affordability issue. As long as interest rates are very low, affordability continues to be there. Now, there will be an inflection point where affordability goes down as interest rates go up, then it becomes less and less affordable. The other thing about 2007 was the lending environment was much different and much looser than it is today. And although things have relaxed since the, you know, right after the Great Recession, certainly has relaxed a little bit. I'll tell you, I just went through a loan process myself, and it's giving blood to try and get through that process and get approved, even when, you know, you have everything. I mean, they want every I dotted and T crossed, and they want all their documentation, and I had to go back, you know, over and over and over again with the underwriter with different things. So I would say that we're not in that kind of bubble, but as we continue to see home prices go up and affordability goes down, like I said, affordability is the real key, Ed, when it comes to homes. And here's the other thing that we've been talking about. I just want to reiterate. There's not enough supply for the demand. So as long as there's more demand than there's supply, that does a couple things. That raises prices. That's going, you know, you've heard about people going in. There's multiple offers. People are offering above asking. Right. And so what I would warn the public about and investors about is be careful. Don't get caught up in that frenzy. Not to, you know, you're going to hear people say, waive the appraisal, waive the inspection. I would never waive an appraisal. I would never waive an inspection. And if you can't find a house that where you can do those things, it's not a house worth buying because that's too much risk. So it's really, at this point, looking at buying smart and making sure you've assessed all the risks and not overpaying too much. You know, the market has gone up. Okay, yes, you can pay market value, just don't overpay.
Okay, that's sound advice. And I'd love for you to answer a specific question from a listener here in Laguna Beach. First time buyer, found a home for about $1 million, a little under $1 million, and feels that it's about $100,000 over what it really should be valued. Are they making a mistake moving on this property?
Well, the way to find out is to have an appraisal. So what you need to realize is the people who do appraisals, they have their job on the line. And that's what happened in the 07 is that you had appraisals being done that weren't quite justifiable. Now those appraisers are very careful. They don't want to lose their license. They don't want to lose their job. And so I would say as long as you have an appraisal contingency on that house and get an appraisal, you're okay, because if the appraisal comes back, if you have an appraisal contingency, the appraisal comes back at 900, it's open for renegotiation with the seller. You're not obligated anymore as long as you have an appraisal contingency. And that's why that appraisal contingency is so important. And as a layperson, you're not going to know what that house is worth, but an appraiser is, because they have to use real comps in the area and show how they're justifying that amount.
Excellent. Thank you for answering that for her. Let me talk about U.S. stock futures right now. They were flat after rising near record territory yesterday, and stocks and bonds settled down after plunging last week when the Fed announced it would raise rates sooner than expected. But we've seen double-digit growth. We've seen double-digit advantages for investors. Where do investors go from here?
So that's a great question, Ed. We have had an amazing first half of the year in the market. And let's just go back to the beginning of the year where, you know, last year we had an amazing end to the year after the pandemic. And at the end of last year, a lot of people said, wait a minute, the market's gone up so much, it can't go up any further. And look, we're now up double-digit returns across the Dow Jones, the S&P, and the NASDAQ, all in double-digit territories. And some areas of the market, like small-cap value, are up almost 30%. So we have had an amazing run-up now just year-to-date. And so now where investors need to look at is the summer months right now, and what we saw last week, are the markets evaluating what's going to happen next, both at the Federal Reserve level, what's going to happen with the Fed, and how is that going to impact the markets? as well as the taxation, the proposals that are being presented, and how are those proposals going to be funded through changing our tax structure. So the second half of the year is all about that. And I'd say in the summer is when the markets are going to be a little bit volatile, sorting all of that out. What I will say is we think the markets still have room to run. But at this point, it's a stock picker's market. It's not the overall market. And so what we saw with kind of the reopening trade is everything went up. And now I think we're going to be much more selective on what things go up from here. And the reason for the hit last week is in technology, large technology companies have relied upon the low interest rate environment to take on debt and scale their businesses. And that game is almost over. As we know, interest rates will have to go up. And that's why we've been saying we do believe in this rotation in the market towards value, not giving up all your tech. That doesn't mean technology companies that have a lot of cash flow, free cash flow, and are not severely in debt, and our innovative companies, I think, still have room to grow. But for those companies that rely upon debt, a shift towards value, and also as we look at the inflation picture, we also think that people are going to want those dividend-paying stocks of getting money now versus counting on growth in the future. So those are all things for investors to consider.
Beautifully and clearly explained. Thank you. How do our listeners find you? I would love to take a meeting with Laureen. I hear this all the time.
You can reach us at 949-748-1177 or look at our website at wealthwisefinancial.com.
She's the president and CEO, and I should say it again, she's the award-winning president and CEO of Wealthwise Financial Services. If you need an address, a phone number, an email, you call me here. I'll be happy to get that to you. Laureen Gilbert, thank you so much for spending time with us this morning.
Thank you, Ed. Have a great day.
You as well. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right. 8:20 the time. It's the Mornings with Ed Show. Money.